So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Tuesday is the anniversary of the first Tarzan movie to hit the silver screen.
Then on Wednesday, we tell the story of how Gottlieb Daimler inadvertently invented the motorbike.
On Thursday, we explain how MSG got demonized in the 1960s.
And on Friday, we revisit a legendary battle on a frozen Russian lake.
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes each weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the Media Podcast. I'm Ollie Mann. On today's show, the quarterly radio ratings are in. We'll crunch the numbers from the latest Radars and tell you all you need to know about the state of UK radio. Vice hits 1 million subscribers on YouTube, but as a company with profits expected at $500 million this year, are they really getting paid in likes? We'll also discuss the fallout from MIPCOM, the background to The Guardian's Whisper Scoop, and the table plan for Guido Fawkes' 10th anniversary bash. This is the Media Podcast, sponsored by Audioboo. Well, joining me at the Hospital Club this week are the media writer Maggie Brown and Broadcast Magazine's news editor Jake Cantor. Welcome to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
Slightly more illustrious surrounds, isn't it, than when you were last on the pod?
It's deeply glamorous. Yeah. We even get a drink.
Yeah, she's one glass down, listeners, so see if you can note the progression.
No sips have been taken.
Throughout the show. Jake, whilst we were in Salford last week covering the radio festival, you guys at Broadcast went to Cannes.
Yes.
Must have been a tough choice. Bigger budgets, I guess. There were a few commissions that caught my eye at MIPCOM. Maybe you can talk us through them. First of all, Dating Naked.
They used to be dating in the dark. Do you remember that?
I do not. How did that work? Infrared cameras?
Yes.
Yeah, well, it's very similar.
It did
exactly
otherwise
what it would be a radio format.
This, again, does exactly the same. It is what it is. And people get together. They date naked and decide if they want to carry on their relationship. It's currently airing on VH1 in America. Apparently there was some interest from UK broadcasters, but we're going to have to watch this space to see if anyone
bizarre,
picks it up.
I mean, not to get too crude, but you'd imagine there'd be a fairly obvious sign as to whether the man in that particular equation would want to carry on with that relationship. But anyway, Battle Cats, what's that?
Battle Cats, I can exclusively reveal, follows a group of eccentric cat owners as they pit their pets against each other in extreme feline challenges. Now, quite what that means, I don't really know. But given
catching mice.
Given how well cats do on YouTube, one can only imagine
you wouldn't
that
want to
UK broadcasters would be lining up for this one.
And dogs.
Maggie, you didn't fly out to Cannes, but you have been in Newcastle today. What was that like? What were you doing?
Oh, I've been actually chairing the Arts TV Forum. A lot of really good people turned up to talk to delegates in the northeast. Everybody's feeling a little bit sort of worried now, especially the BBC. There's also this rise of regionalism, the fact that the northeast and the eastern side of the country actually has been neglected, as Salford has taken all of the sort of the goodies, and Birmingham's coming up a bit too in BBC terms. So there was that. Alan Yentob, I had to chair.
He made it up to Newcastle, did he?
He did. He'd been in
on
New York.
Bike.
Indeed, he'd been in New York at the weekend because he just setting up Jeff Koons and various other things. He had dinner with Mark Thompson, blah, blah, blah. You know, Alan is a great networker. But yes, he did come up, and I conducted a 40-minute discussion with him about the BBC's new arts initiative, putting arts up there with news and sport as part of the brand. And then he showed some clips from his recent Imagines and all the rest of it, and tried to explain this dual role as creative director of the whole of the BBC, not just arts, and also presenter of the Imagine strand. And we then had a very, very good discussion because, for the first time, I haven't heard him before, Phil Edgar Jones, the new director of Sky Arts, was there. He runs 1 and 2 now. And we had Richard Klein, who runs Perspective on ITV, somebody from Channel 4. I'm really very interested to see if the BBC's arts initiative turns out to be of substance. And that was one of the things that was being discussed, because we really don't know. They've got a lot of sort of initiatives going on, but it's not clear to me whether audiences and the reach, more people coming into the arts, is actually happening.
Yeah, Jake, what's your view on that, just briefly before we move on to other stories? Because, you know, there's all this branding, and we in media bubbles talk about this, but actually the public haven't got any increasing awareness of BBC Arts and BBC Music yet, have they?
I think if you asked a member of the Joe public if they knew about the BBC Arts brand, they'd say no. I mean, it's still in its infancy. But this is a big issue for Tony Hall. I mean, he's attached himself to this project very publicly. I think there will be expectation for success. I think if the BBC wants to gain an understanding of what good arts programming looks like, it only needs to look at Channel 4 and Grayson Perry, which launched this week, his new series, Who Are You?, which was just fantastic. And he has an amazing way of connecting with an audience. And I wouldn't be too surprised if the BBC were having a little look at Grayson and whether he might be able to do a bit of work for them.
But of course, they managed to get him to do the Reith lectures after Channel 4 had made him into a broadcasting star. One of the things that was discussed, really, though, is whether arts actually can work in primetime slots at 9 p.m. Now, interestingly, on Saturday night, they did actually run Rembrandt, a very, very good documentary by Simon Sharma. Now, that only got 900,000 viewers. Now, I think that's quite good, but I'm not name-dropping now, but I actually also have been interviewing David Attenborough this week, and I found out that David Attenborough and I had watched the same Rembrandt programme
Not together,
separately in our houses in London before I interviewed him on the Sunday. But he had made a very critical attack on both BBC Two, Rembrandt was on BBC Two, and also on the state of BBC Arts and documentaries. Remember, this is the man who basically founded BBC Two and also commissioned Civilization. And so this programme was made by their so-called team, you know, the arts team, either Culture or Imagine, but it actually went out under the name Rembrandt, which makes me suspect too that they know that they've got a problem with these anonymous sounding brands, that you're not really interested in the Culture show, you're interested in what is on that show. So I agree with you that they probably are having quite a lot of rethinks to make it give some punch, really, to the arts.
Okay, well, let's move on from TV to radio with the tempting prospect of a shared Maggie Brown David Attenborough platform on Beamly in the back of our minds, and tackle some stories from the world of the wireless. First up, how quickly time flies. It is the Rajars again. The UK, you both look very excited.
I think they come round far too often.
Hold that thought, Maggie, because first we've got someone who does care about this stuff. It's radio consultant Matt Deegan. Let's discover his take on the radio ratings.
I think it's all about the rise of the spin-off. Great response for Heat Radio. So Heat is up to nearly 1 million listeners, and they've kind of steadily grown over the last 18 months. It's actually a really good listen. Absolute 80s, 1.4 million, biggest commercial digital radio station. And it had like a breakfast increase, because this is since Absolute Radio have done their special magical Project Banana technology, which means Christian O'Connell, which is a fun, entertaining breakfast show on the main station. You can tune in on the spin-off, so 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, noughties and classic rock, but it gives you the right music for each of those stations. And you know what? If someone listens, there's an old adage of, you know, the radio station you go to bed to is the one you wake up to. You know, for a lot of 80s listeners before, they got something else when they woke up, and so encourage more switching. Whereas if you've got the same sort of thing all the time, you kind of keep those listeners longer. And I think they're really reaping the benefits of that. Not great for Global Radio's Heart London. I think there is something about demographics, and, you know, this is looking at July, August and September, big holiday time, families listen to that radio station. So I think probably a blip for them. Heart in the rest of the country, where they've taken over lots of real radios recently, actually doing quite well and starting to really kind of put on audience. And the sort of anoraki naysayers saying, how dare they take more local radio away from us, evil Global Radio. Hey, guess what? Turns out people quite like Heart. I think the BBC, Six Music's had a good book, nearly 2 million. Radio 1's pulled back a bit. Still over 10 million, that's like a psychologically important number for them. But I think they're going to still have to think about what they're doing if they really want to try and drag their age younger whilst also staying over 10 million.
That was Matt Deegan of Folder Media. Maggie, you were expressing some scepticism about the whole process there.
Well, yes, I think they do come round too often. And, I mean, there's hardly any change. We're a bit surprised because, you know, Radio 3 has recovered a bit. Well, goodness me, they have the proms in the summer, the last quarter. You know, how surprising. So more people are interested in classical music because there's some nice live music going on from some top composers, etc., etc. You know, Radio 4 has gone up a bit. That's very nice. Radio 6 music is continuing to plough its wonderful niche.
That is a big story, isn't it? That's the growth of digital. That's a big story.
I am pleased that there's the growth of digital. I'm very pleased, too, that Radio 4 is holding its own, despite, in my opinion, absolutely dreadful storylines in The Archers. But I just groan, really, because actually, literally, nothing much changes.
I think if there's one trend we might be able to pull from it, I think some very interesting comments from Ben Cooper, the boss of Radio 1 this week. Radio 1's audience was down 2.5% to 10.6 million, and he said that it's only part of the story now, for Radio 1. They're considering launching an iPlayer channel. They have a real presence on YouTube. It'd be interesting to see whether the trust, which is currently examining the proposal for Radio 1 online and the iPlayer channel, whether it believes there is room for both Radio 1 and BBC Three as iPlayer propositions.
But can we all agree, and we did discuss this last time the Radars came around, but can we all agree the system is completely flawed? People writing in pen and paper diaries what they've been listening to retrospectively. That's nuts.
See, I was going to say that, but I thought that I would be a lone voice, because it seems that the radio industry has no appetite for change.
Well, we've got nothing else to lean on, and whilst Ollie Mann Through the Night is London's number one overnight radio show by some margin, why should we? Thank you. I'd just mention it incidentally, because obviously it's the big story everyone's talking about. But Maggie, you know, it is a problem, isn't it, this way of measuring ratings?
But I mean, they've tried all the different methods of picking up, using all sorts of badges and goodness knows what, and wristwatches, and none of it appears to have worked. In a funny way, the Barb system is at least trying to modernise using a certain amount of catch-up from laptops and on the go media and tablets, but it's a problem for everybody, really. What I feel about Rajar is that it probably over the long term does capture trends, but I don't really trust it from one quarter to the next.
I suppose it captures brand awareness, doesn't it? But that's different as to what people are actually listening to. Well, let's stick with radio. Some changes at the BBC. Caroline Raphael leaving Radio 4 after 30 years at the Beeb. As exec, she was responsible for comedy shows at the station and its sister channel as well, for Extra. Jake, why do you think she's going?
Well, sadly, I think it's a symptom of the cutbacks in the BBC news division and radio as well. Consequently, I think her job was reduced to a part-time role. I'm not too close to this story, so I don't know whether that was a direct cause and effect, but the report suggests that it did have some bearing on her decision to leave. And I, you know, reading her credits, extraordinary wealth of experience in comedy, commissioned some fantastic shows, launched the careers, well, helped launch the careers of people like Miranda, you know, David Walliams, Matt Lucas. The BBC needs to make sure that it has an eye on these things and continues to commission great comedy for radio.
And Maggie, as a regular Radio 4 listener, do you think they are still, you know, as fresh as they need to be, particularly at 6.30 when it comes to comedy?
I don't think they do either. 6.30 slots. On the other hand, look, from her point of view, 30 years at the BBC, you're guaranteed of a brilliant pension. You get a good payoff, and I bet you have independent producers lining up to tap you. So I wouldn't have thought it's the end of the world for her. It's more of a problem. And 30 years, actually, you know, maybe she'll come up with some brilliant idea for an independent and make herself a fortune.
But what should a new comedy commissioner actually be trying to do there, do you think, Maggie? Because it seems to me you listen to Radio 4, the style of comedy that people are playing out, particularly at 6.30, and it's a sort of version of what we had in the 80s, isn't it? Whereas, you know,
it does need refreshing, yes.
I mean, you look at what people are listening to on the internet, and it's, I don't know, different style of comedy.
I've actually stopped listening to, I mean, I am a massive radio, I would go to the barricades for Radio 4 myself, but I have stopped listening to the comedy, and I don't know what the answer is, really.
Well, we also heard this week from Alan Davey, the new controller of Radio 3. What did he have to say?
Well, I was actually very interested in this because he was speaking. He also, having been, I'm sorry to say this again, in Gateshead, he actually gave a plug.
You should never apologise for being
He gave a plug to the fact that one of the issues that arose in his interview, because he's stepping down, as we all know, chief executive of the Arts Council England, and he's going to be the new controller of Radio 3. One of the things he said was that there is a problem that the subsidy to London, £40 a head, is much higher than elsewhere in the country, and the correction was underway, but that it would take time, but that you could not simply plonk arts venues or try to sort of artificially create centres of excellence. It took time, but he mentioned that Gateshead is an example of over 14 years creating something really wonderful, because there's a whole, it's a bit like the South Bank in London. But what he also said was that when he goes to Radio 3, the answer is not to dumb down, but to wise up. I don't know quite what that means, but it does mean, I think, that it's not going to be a copy of Classic FM.
I saw a brilliant comment on the Guardian website, actually. Yes. Someone put underneath, that sounds like the sort of thing a contestant says on The Apprentice shortly before getting fired.
Exactly, except that he's getting hired. So, you know, I mean, the question really is also, I'm not exactly sure who's going to be running the proms, because it's rather intrinsic to the health of Radio 3 that they do have a really strong prom season. And going back to our thing about BBC Arts, it's quite clear that there was an area in which they rather cocked up this summer, which was putting the new classical compositions online on this new BBC Arts site and not on television, only to find that there was very poor take-up because, as it turns out, the people who like classical music do not naturally go online for their music. And so next year they're reinstating classical music that's being composed now and given an airing on television rather than hiding it away, so the fans would say, on online.
And Jake, when he talks about wising up rather than dumbing down, do you think anyone's under threat from that? I mean, if I was Petroc Trelawney hosting that kind of quite jolly Classic FM rivaling breakfast show where they play 3-minute bursts of, you know, overtures, would you feel a little bit worried, do you think?
Can I just say, I'm probably not a Radio 3 listener.
Well, but isn't that part of the problem?
Yeah.
I mean, actually, that's the other issue, isn't it? Radio 3 listeners are dying out.
I would naturally tune in to Radio 3, and to be honest, the proms, I just don't consider my thing either. Perhaps the BBC could be doing more to engage with people like me.
Well, obviously you are a Philistine, Jake, but that's the issue, isn't it, Maggie? You know, trying to woo new listeners means to an extent what some of the core Radio 3 listeners would think of as dumbing down.
But it's a problem that has haunted Radio 3 ever since I've been writing about the media. I'm talking about 30 years. This debate has been going on and on and on because the classic Radio 3 listener has always been perceived of as white, male and pretty old, and very, very, very sort of prickly about the integrity of classical music. And on that hangs, there are a lot of problems. I think Davey was also saying, actually, that it was going to be more of a cultural network, which is what it has, to some extent, evolved into.
One of the interesting things that Radio 3's Roger Wright was involved in recently was this project with BBC 3 where they got Phaser from N-Dubs involved, and they trained up some people to perform at one of the proms, and it was a two-part BBC 3 documentary, and that helped. I mean, it was the first.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
first thing I'd really engage with in terms of the proms on the BBC, and I thought it was a great accessible way into that area.
I could hear a lot of those white male older listeners that Maggie's talking about spitting out their coffee at the very idea of Phaser from N-Dubs. Well, that's it for radio news, but we'll have some more media news in brief next.
This episode of the Media Podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for hosting and web design. If you need to get a great-looking website for a forthcoming doc or drama or whatever, and you need to get it really quickly, these folks will sort you out. Squarespace's drag-and-drop tools make it easy to add video, audio, and pictures to your design. They have e-commerce solutions so you can sell your merch, and they have 24-hour support based in the US, UK, and elsewhere. Plans start at $8 a month and includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Get a free trial with no credit card required and 10% off when you use the offer code MEDIAPOD. And please do use that code. It sends a message that it's worth supporting what we do here at the Media Podcast. Begin building your website with Squarespace today. And don't forget, you'll receive 10% off when you use the offer code MEDIAPOD.
Well, welcome back, kids. We all know this is the podcast where you young thrusting types get your main news. But there is a young upstart called Vice, and their YouTube channel hit 1 million subscribers this week. They've been talking up their ambitions for the future. Well, you would with that kind of number, wouldn't you? Jake, broadcast were at the screening of their latest documentary this week. What have Vice got planned for the future? What are they talking about?
Well, they're talking a lot about giving more young independent filmmakers an opportunity. They're starting to engage with the production sector in the UK. I mean, they do a lot of stuff in-house, but they are actively seeking ideas that they can put on their online channels. Generally, TV is quite fascinated by Vice. I think it's, you know, often mentioned in the same breath as Netflix and YouTube. I think one of the interesting things they're doing at the moment is they're actually starting to schedule their documentaries. So they're actually put up on YouTube at a certain time on a certain day of the week. And that could provide some really interesting lessons for BBC Three if it does indeed move online next year.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, it puts pay to the lie, doesn't it? The young people aren't interested in politics, aren't interested in news. It just has to be packaged in a slightly different way.
The documentary was on Afghanistan, which I think was really interesting. And secondly, they've recruited for the UK Kevin Sutcliffe, who was the person behind really all of the great recent current affairs shows at Channel 4. It's a really, really good appointment. I don't know how he was kind of squeezed out in the new Jay Hunt regime. So I think it's, again, one of these very good examples of new channels opening up and new ways of documentary makers not being kind of so controlled by the commissioning editors that exist now, but having a new patron, if you like, and a new way of reaching audiences. It's great.
Although they like to present themselves, don't they, understandably so, as a kind of rock and roll anti-establishment alternative to the news. But actually, the co-founder Shane Smith saying Vice is going to make $500 million in profit this year, possibly $1 billion next year. Maggie, that's not coming from YouTube CPMs, is it? There are some big deals here.
Obviously. I mean, I don't. All I know is that actually
doing a deal with HBO
it,
can't hurt, can it?
Can't
and they have
help.
Some very high-profile backers as well in Time Warner and Murdoch's are interested in them, aren't they? Mm.
And you know, documentaries are where it's at. That's the other thing. This is where a lot of filmmakers are actually putting their efforts. Because the real world is as we know it. We're in a very, very interesting era. Mm. This is almost like the 60s. Everything is breaking up. We've got wars, we've got terrible pestilence. I mean, a lot of these things are almost like science fiction, and they're happening now.
Well, you mentioned BBC Three, Jake, and the BBC Trust chair, Rona Fairhead, appeared to say that moving BBC Three online only was a good idea at the House of Commons Select Committee for Culture. What did you think of her performance?
That was actually the one slip-up in what was otherwise a very polished performance. I mean, I have heard in the last couple of days a few grumbles from within the Trust that she went so far. I think it does raise a few questions about what happens when they make the decision. If they decide to back the BBC, then the trust could be accused of this being a fait accompli right from the start. And if they say no, then they could be accused of performing a U-turn.
But the other aspect of that was that, if you recall, David Liddiment was there. Well, David Liddiment, who's carried out a lot of the reviews, is about to leave the trust. Mm. I think he's been very sceptical about the plans to close BBC Three. The other thing is that, quite rightly, the committee asked, why has it taken so long between Tony Hall's announcement, which actually leaked out at the, or was it had to be put out at the end of March, and now, you still haven't seen the formal proposals. What's going on? In the meantime, BBC Three exists in this kind of limbo where you almost run down the commissioning, and yet everybody's sort of uncertain about what is going to happen next. So it's a very, very strange situation to be in. And what it shows is, if Rona was kind of thinking out loud, it shows that possibly there isn't this degree of objectivity and separation on a big strategic decision like that that ought to exist between the BBC executive and the BBC Trust. Now, quite separately, I have been, over the past few weeks, writing an article about the BBC and Scotland and what is going to happen under any kind of new form of devolution. And I have been trying to find out what both sides think, only to find that, A, nobody would talk to me, but so we're in the pre-election phase. But secondly, the statement that was finally provided by the Trust was actually the statement that the BBC executive also agreed with. Mm. So they're as one over an issue like that. What should be now done about BBC Scotland and its services, which, again, strikes me as very unsatisfactory, to be honest with you.
Because the issue, the old chestnut being they're supposed to be, you know, the public's champion, not the BBC's champion.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, there is a distinct difference of interest between the executive and the trust, and yet on big decisions you wonder really whether that separation is in place. There's clearly something wrong with the governance, and that was, I think, was Sajid Javid didn't actually say anything very new, but he was clearly indicating that the BBC, well, I mean, we're in an election year, I know, but the BBC should not take anything for granted now.
Indeed, Ben Bradshaw said the trustees have got a death wish if they think that they're going to carry on in their jobs, I think. Something along those lines.
But he also, if you recall, in that, it was very interesting. The classic BBC defence, which Bradshaw, as a former culture secretary for Labour, was talking about, was the value of the BBC, you know, 40p a day or whatever. And Sajid Javid was having none of it. He was not, he would not countenance this idea that just because per day it costs X amount. He said it's still £145.50 a year, and for some families that's a lot, and he just would not buy that classic BBC defence, let alone over the whole thing of decriminalisation. So the BBC is in a very sticky place right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear that there are much bigger issues facing Rona Fairhead than the decision over BBC Three. One thing I wanted to just say, I thought Ben Bradshaw, just sticking with Ben actually, briefly, he made a really good point, I thought, and tried to get some comment from the Trust on it, but he basically said it should be incumbent on the political parties to put their position on the BBC in their manifestos, in their political manifestos when it comes to the election next year. I think that's a brilliant point, and I would like to see transparency from the political parties as to what their plans are for the BBC.
I would agree with that.
And that would probably, let's be honest, work out better for the BBC, wouldn't it? Because none of them want to campaign on the basis they want to reduce it.
Oh, you'd have to be a mad politician to decide that you're going to publicly cripple the BBC, because the BBC is still is a hugely popular institution.
Okay, well, a quick bit of news on that channel we'd all pay double BBC subscription to watch if we could, Channel 5. They've reached a deal with Ofcom regarding the terms of sale to Viacom. Jake, what's changed?
Well, there's been an increase in original content in prime time from 40% to 45%. Having said that, half the content in prime time on Channel 5 is original currently, so it's already hitting that target. There's a greater commitment to news, so they're going to do, well, their news hours are going to go up from 260 to 280 a year, and this is really good news. I mean, this is Viacom, a huge US media company, coming in and saying we are backing UK content, and that can only be good news.
Especially for the bidders of ITV. If anybody wants to take over ITV, this sets an incredible precedent. Oh, you know, you can trust us Americans. Give us anything. Give us the crown jewels.
Will you be watching, though, Maggie?
Channel 5?
Yes.
Well, I might do. I mean,
with the sound down and Radio 3 on?
Well, I like things like the Hotel Inspector.
Oh, yeah, that is good.
They've got some good things like the Gadget Show. I mean, one shouldn't be snooty.
Well, you can be snooty. I'm
it's
sort of inviting
really
you to do
though,
that,
is it?
No, but I mean, Channel 5 News, for example, over the years, and I know when I've been judging awards, has done a lot of news stories that actually are of interest, say, to women and mothers at home, because the news has been at 5 o'clock. Lots of quite good stuff. So I think it's an opportunity waiting to be exploited.
Very good. All right. Well, also this week, The Guardian revealed that the social media app Whisper was tracking users that thought they were messaging anonymously. This was using their IP address to provide location data. The story raised a few eyebrows for another reason, though. The Guardian found all of this out when their team went to meet Whisper about a collaboration and then passed what they found out to the editorial side of the business. Jake, this is an interesting way to get a scoop, isn't it?
I have to say, the Guardian article, which I've read in full, isn't massively clear about whether there was any sort of commercial relationship. I think if there was a commercial relationship, that really muddies the waters and makes this look a bit suspect, I think. If it was purely an editorial partnership whereby they were sharing information or you know, journalistic know-how, then perhaps it's a bit more acceptable and a bit more palatable. I'm not entirely sure where I sit on this, and I have to say the Guardian piece isn't particularly transparent about the way it picked up this information. I think you have to read down to like the 11th par in the story to find out how it sourced this.
And Maggie, do you think actually though you have a responsibility as a journalist, even if you're going along for a commercial discussion, if you discover something that you think is of interest, of public interest, to report it?
Yes, of course. I mean, goodness me, of course. But I'm just amazed that everybody's so naive to think that you think you're anonymous, but you're being tracked. I always assume you are. So, I mean, I don't know how to put it. I probably sound like I'm old and cynical, but what do you expect?
I think Whisper makes very public commitments, though, not
to
track people.
I know it does, but what do you expect?
Do you think it's going to make it harder, though, Maggie, for The Guardian to find business partners? You know, this is out there. It gets shared. It's on the internet forever.
Well, I mean, The Guardian is right to be very choosy. It has to protect its brand.
The final word from Maggie Brown there. Right, in slightly more light-hearted matters, just time for the media quiz.
Hey.
This week, it is entitled Common Ground. I'll list some people. You just have to tell me what media story connects them. As ever, use your name to buzz in. Cadbury's Cream Egg for the winner. Number one. The Guardian's Dan Sabah. Sky News's Kay Burley. Tory strategist Linton Crosby. Oh, Maggie, say your name. Say your name.
Oh, Maggie Brown, Maggie, Guido Fawkes, horrible, horrible 10th anniversary dinner. The dinner from hell, and you look at the guest list, but they were there.
Which is extraordinary, though, isn't it, just how establishment they are as figures, and there they are at
Guido
Fawkes' dinner.
Most of them, they look, many men who probably prefer to go out to dinner than maybe go home to their wives, I don't know.
Well, this was a dinner plan that was ripped off the wall by the Telegraph's Peter Oborne.
Good for him.
I mean, it shows how cosy Guido Fawkes is with the establishment, though, doesn't it, Jake?
Absolutely.
That was the surprise.
I like Guido Fawkes. He's a perfectly nice person. I mean, you know, I wouldn't say I wouldn't go to a dinner, but
I'm pleased to see you've got your ethical code, Megan. You are coming to the Media Podcast Drinks later. Okay, number two. Quantum Leap's Scott Bakula and Quantum Leap's Dean Stockwell. What connects those people?
I have absolutely no idea.
The connection is that NCIS New Orleans is the new programme there. Filming Stockwell will be reunited with Bakula in a Thanksgiving special.
Oh, well, I don't watch it, so there you go.
Okay, well, there you are. Right, number three. Barack Obama, James Naughty, Jill Abramson...
Jake.
Yeah. Jake got in first.
Why
we're
on a technicality here?
So the rules are the rules. Yes.
Explain
what you mean by Bren Bradley.
The great editor of the Washington Post, who was there when Nixon's was exposed and Watergate, the Watergate scandal shocked the whole of the world, really.
And he passed away this week.
He died, yes, at age 93. Obama had already given him an honour, but everybody gave tributes.
What struck me about this week and the story of Ben Bradley is that this was a proper journalist who oversaw proper stories, and in an age of fast news and clickbait, I think we'd do well to remember his legacy.
The key thing was he demanded two sources on the stories. That's the key thing. So although there was the deep throat, And this is very interesting in the film of All the President's Men. He always drove the two quite young reporters, remember, to investigate. It wasn't good enough to just have one. If, for example, you knew that Howard Hunt very early on had been paying or there was an involvement, so get the extra information. And it was follow the money, if you remember, because the money had basically come from the White House. So that was why he was such, I mean, he was a really tough experienced editor taking a huge gamble, but it was these two sources.
Okay, well, you both got that right. Jake, you did buzz in, but then Maggie got the answer first. We've got a tiebreak, but I think in conclusion, I think I preferred Jake's tribute to the man. I'm sorry. I thought it was more succinct.
Yes, have
we got any other questions?
So I think, well, no, Jake, you're winning the cream egg.
Can I do a What Connects These People?
Go on.
For you two, how about Jon Snow,
yeah,
Philip Davis, and yeah, Krishnan Guru Murphy?
Philip Davis, who's a pretty right-wing Tory on the Culture Media Sport Committee, was having a tour of the newsroom, and Jon Snow started to have a go at him because he'd criticised
him.
Well,
that is disputed by Philip Davis.
I know.
Yeah, all right. Don't let the cream egg go to your head. I'm the host here.
But clearly, and Krishnan came in to defend his co-presenter.
All right.
Well,
sounds like hilarious.
Whilst we're just throwing in what connects these people, what connects Michael Kalman and Mark Parker? Talk about Let's Follow the Money. They are both contributors to this episode of the Media Podcast. They both crowdfunded the show.
Much. Thank you.
So big thanks to them. The episode is dedicated to you, Michael Kalman, who, when not working in Canadian telly, is usually lost somewhere in the Rockies. And also Mark Parker, thank you for your money too. You are a former announcer at Euston Station. But bigger thanks even to Maggie Brown and to Jake Cantor. Thank you very much, chaps. We will be back in 2 weeks' time. Remember to get the episode straight away by subscribing at themediapodcast.com. I've been Ollie Mann. And the producer is Matt Hill. Until next time, bye-bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.